Welcome today to the Sutta study class on Majjhima 32, the Mahagosinga Sutta. And this particular sutta has three Chinese parallels. One found in the Majjhima Agama, one in the Ekotara Agama. So the Majjhima Agama being, it's called Sarvasivada, Ekotara Agama being unknown school, often attributed to the Mahasanghikas, and an individual translation. And the individual translation is chapter 16 of T154. Okay, so there's a volume of the Taisho, 154th volume, and one chapter of that is the current sutta. And this discourse that was translated by Dharma Raksha between 265 and 316 CE. So that was translated about 100 years earlier than the full translations of the Agamas and Vinayas appeared. So it's like a pioneering translation. So in certain cases you can see when they have different generations of translations of suttas in Chinese, in certain cases you can see an actual development in the Indic text on which the translation was based. So the earlier translation is simpler and then they get more and more florid as they go along. That's particularly in the case of the Mahayana sutras, where there's some very substantial differences in the actual different translations of what's supposed to be the same sutta, but actually the suttas can vary tremendously. And obviously they went through many different editions and re-editings and so on and so forth while in India. But that's mainly in the Mahayana Sutras. In the Agama Sutras, it's a bit difficult to discern any kind of overall pattern with the individual translations. They don't seem to be necessarily either earlier or later than the Agamas themselves. And usually very difficult to discern what school they come from, although in certain cases they are very similar to the Sarvasivadin scriptures. So no doubt they came to China in the same routes that the full collections would have come, which is mainly through the land route, through the Silk Road, or else on the sea route. And so by coming from the same roots would tend to mean that they would be associated with similar kinds of schools which were concentrated in those areas. But nevertheless, we usually don't know very much about it. So this particular discourse, Mahagosinga Sutta, in the same location as last week's sutta, and here it's not just Aniruddha and his two mates who are staying there, but now a whole gang of bhikkhus are there staying in the woods together. Perhaps they'd heard about it from Venerable Aniruddha, and he'd sort of spread the word and said, hey, you know, it's a bit like kind of the tourist thing where you sort of find an undiscovered beach that nobody's ever been to, and you say, wow, that's fantastic, and it's good, and you tell your mates about it, and then a couple of years later it's in Lonely Planet, and then there's resorts and things there, and then you don't want to go back there again. So maybe that was the case with the Mahagosinga Wood Sutta, with the Gosinga Wood. Became popular for being a beautiful place to meditate. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was living in the park of the Gosinga Sala Tree Wood, together with a number of very well-known elder disciples. So very well-known is Abhinyata Dehi. Abhinyata, well-known.
And what's Sambhalu who Lehi?
Sambahulehi.
Second line, first word.
Ah, okay. Sambahula is many. Sambahula. Abhinyatehi, abhinyatehi. So abhinyata is well known. So abhinyatehi, abhinyatehi is very well known. And the ending, the ehi ending, here is an instrumental case, meaning with. So that agrees with this word here, sadhing. It translates sadhing as together, together with. Many very well-known elder disciples. Okay. What I might do, I thought of doing this for a while, is when we do the sutta classes, I might pick up one particular grammatical case in the Pali, and then we can point that out as we go along and learn to identify it. Is that good? Yeah. I've been doing things more or less at random, and just randomly picking things out as they occur to me and as they seem interesting to me. But of course, the ones that seem interesting to me are probably the most obscure ones. And so let's start with the basics, and let's start with the nominative case. Okay, so the nominative case is usually the subject of the verb. Actually, no, let's
do the ehi thing.
That's a bit trickier. The ehi thing's a bit trickier. Okay, so here in this sentence, the nominative case, nominative word is bhagava. Okay, so this is a nominative singular.
Is that diminutive? Nominative,
yeah. You know what that means?
A noun.
It's a class of nouns, yeah. It's a declension of the nouns, yeah. So there are eight cases or declensions in which nouns can appear in Pali, and they express different functions that a word can perform in a sentence or that a noun can perform in a sentence. And probably the most common and most basic one is the nominative, which expresses the subject of the verb, so the one who does something. So here, the Bhagava Viharati, okay, the Blessed One dwells. So that's about the simplest sentence that you can make in Pali, is to say something like that. The Blessed One dwells.
Yeah, that would make it total.
That would make it total, but you could say he dwells, as in the dude abides, or something like that. Doesn't have to have an object. It's transitive or intransitive. Here it does have to have an object. The Blessed One dwells in the forest, okay? So this is locative case in the forest, but we won't get onto that. But we'll just notice the nominative cases when they go along, and we'll see how they function in the sentence. Okay, so this first one, the nominative is the Bhagava, he's dwelling in. Okay, so he's living there.
Actually, when you say there are eight different functions that they perform,
eight declensions, yeah.
Out of so when you say Bhagava Viharati, so can you just say why that's one of the eight?
Okay. The eight declensions of nouns are the nominative, which is the subject of the verb, the accusative, which is the object of the verb, okay, the vocative, which is what you call someone. So when the Buddha says monks, this is the vocative. Instrumental expresses agency, so that means by, through, or with something. Ablative expresses separation, so from something. Dative expresses towards something, or to something, to give something to somebody. Genitive is of something in the sense of belonging to someone. Yeah? And the locative expresses context and location, so in something or at something. Okay, so these are all different words which you use. So most of these have become eroded from English. So in Old English they had all of these cases. They actually belong to Old Indo-European, had eight cases just as Pali does. And so does Latin, or similar cases, but they've been eroded from modern languages, most modern languages. And you still have something of the difference, for example, in the English words he and him. Okay, he is a nominative case. So you say he gave the book to him. Okay, him being accusative, and you'd just swap them around. But normally we don't do that. Normally you'd say Jack gave the book to Jill. And you don't change Jack and Jill, you'd say Jill gave the book to Jack. You don't change the cases, yeah? But in Pali, you change the cases around. So even in the case of names, you would change the case endings around in those kinds of cases, things. All right? So that's just a general instruction. But we won't make too much of it. I don't want to make too much of the whole grammatical thing, but we'll just notice it as we go along. All right. Now, then, Venerable Mahamoggallana, in the evening, sayanha samayam. Okay, patisalana from retreat. So patisalana is the word they used when they were all going off and sitting meditation by themselves. Utthito, having come out, stood up from meditation, approached Venerable Mahakasapa. Having approached, he said to Venerable Mahakasapa this: "Come, friend Kasapa, let's go to where Venerable Sariputta is staying, to listen to the Dhamma, Dhamma Savanayati." Okay. Eva Mavuso, okay, friend, said Mahakasapa, replied to Venerable Mahamoggallana. Okay. So in this sentence here, the nominative is the Mahamoggallana. Okay. So notice here, this is the very common nominative form in Pali, which is ending with an O. Right. So what determines in a grammatical form, a particular grammatical declension, will be expressed in the language in a number of different ways. Just as you might say he and him, and you might say she and her, okay, both of them being nominative and accusative, respectively, but they appear in the language in different ways. They don't sound necessarily the same all the time, okay? So here, Mahamoggallana, the nominative here is expressed by an O, whereas before we saw the nominative in Bhagava is expressed by a long A, okay? Now, both of these are masculine singular forms. The reason why they are different is because they have a different, what we call a different stem. A stem is a grammatical, like a ghost, which is invented by grammarians in order to explain these kinds of things. So grammarians invent a stem, which they call a short A stem, and then they make a rule that if you have a word with a short A stem, then when that appears in the language as a nominative masculine singular, then it appears as an O, okay? And similarly, this is Bhagava. This is usually explained as a consonant declension, Bhagavan or Bhagavant. And when that appears as a nominative masculine singular, it appears as a long A, okay? So there's this idea that there's this kind of basic, the word has a basic form which is underlying the ways that, the transformed ways that it appears in the actual language, okay? This is the idea that grammarians work with, that there's this basic form. So you can identify the basic form of the word, okay? And then that appears in language in different ways, right? We use exactly the same thing in English, in our dictionaries, because the words actually appear in language in different forms. So, for example, you know, a word like word, it appears as also words, okay? It's a plural form, as words. So, but we don't necessarily list every plural form in the dictionary. We say that there's an underlying word, which is word, and then that appears in the language in different ways. The same thing's happening here. It just happens in more thoroughgoing and more complex ways in older languages. So what tends to happen as languages get used is they get smoothed out because they get handled like a piece of wood, and all of the kind of the rough edges and the gnarly bits and so on get sort of smoothed out over time, and it gets worn out and becomes the shape of it becomes simpler. So as the actor here, he rises, but he's something like Utthito, so to see the O agrees with the O there. From out of his retreat, then approaches Mahakasapa. So this. You might have that cut out. Yeah, sorry about that. I did some fairly brutal editing on the text there to get it down to 2 pages. Mahamoggallana approached, okay, Mahakasapa. That's the essence of this sentence. Mahamoggallana approached Mahakasapa. Tandapasankami, this is a past tense. So, again, he's the subject of the verb. He's the one who's doing the action of the verb. Okay.
And the verb comes last.
The verb usually comes last in Pali, yeah. Although in Pali, the word order is not as significant as it is in English, but typically the verb comes at the end, yeah. Okay.
That's Latin as well. Uh-huh. What is yena yasma?
Yena yasma is ayasma is venerable. Okay. So this is another nominative form. Okay. And here the ma is similar to the va or bhagava. You see they both end in the long A. Okay? And both of them have a meaning of something like endowed with or possessing. Okay? So Bhagava, possessing Bhaga, which here means blessings or fortune or good stuff. Okay? So the Bhagava is the one who possesses or has lots of good stuff. Right? Ayasma, ayas is age. Okay? So one possessing age. So in other words, an elder, a venerable one. Yeah? And the yena is this is a separate word which is just combined, okay? Just to make it difficult for Pali students. Okay? And they put it there together. So yena ayasma, it's actually yena ayasma. Okay, so we have here, for example, yena ayasma, it's all yena. When they approach the Buddha, it's yena Bhagava. But this one, because ayasma, they joined it up together. So this is very common in Pali, that where two words which are separate will get joined together in a word. Especially if you've just got a little A there, and then a long A following. And if you're saying that in language, you say yena ayasma, but you actually just tend to put them together, yena ayasma. Yeah, and you tend to put the words together. Actually, we do that all the time in English. We're constantly running words together in our spoken language, but we don't actually represent that when we write the language. We write it as if the words are all kept separate. But actually, if you analyze the spoken language, we're constantly, when we're making sentences, running all the words together in exactly this kind of way.
Yeah. Okay. When you find two little letters in the middle of a word and you say that is what mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, is that fairly regular, or do you just pick out two little letters? Well, it's quite often that sometimes it's even just the Y by itself.
Yeah, just one.
It isn't even there.
Yeah, it's just one letter, yeah.
So how do you know this?
I learned that from my music classes, because we studied Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and you've got like the opening motif da 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 da, and they showed us how like you can go like three pages on or five pages on and like point to one note, yeah, and say that note is actually derived from this opening motif, yeah, and even though it sounds like really crazy, but actually if you trace it through how he's used it, you can actually find, oh yeah, it's true, he's actually take that one note is actually derived from this opening thing. And so it's the same with the languages, that it's each step is quite simple and quite small in and of itself. And so you learn to recognize the end results of the steps. Now, okay, so all of these monks, hang on, I haven't even discussed the actual topic of the sutta yet. Let's just talk about the grammar, let's forget the actual sutta. Right, so all of these great monks. Now, of course, where are the great bhikkhunis? Well, they were over in the Andawana, the blind man's grove, defeating Mara at this time, okay? So this is why it's only the bhikkhus in this one. Now, Venerable Sariputta.
Where did you source that one from, Bhattha?
I just made it up, all right? Venerable Sariputta. So who is he?
The top man.
The top man?
Buddha's.
And what was he famous for?
Meditation. Wisdom, teaching Dharma.
Putting on his lower robe. What? He was famous for putting on his lower robe.
Putting me on.
Now, there's a very nice story when he was going out for alms round once, and the little novice pointed out that he had his lower robe was on unevenly, and so he sort of said, "Oh, okay." So he went behind the bush and adjusted his robe, and then came out and said to the novice, "Thank you, teacher."
Who is the novice?
I don't know. I don't know if it's him. So,
not sarcastically.
Have you ever heard of any sarcastic monks? No, I don't answer that question. Now, this is a great book if you haven't read it or found it. We've got a couple of copies here. the great disciples of the Buddha, their lives, their works, and their legacy. This was by, originally it was a series of wheel publications by Jnanaponika and Helmut Hecker. Jnanaponika, of course, being the great German monk, teacher of Bhikkhu Bodhi, and Helmut Hecker being a German lay teacher. He's not so well known in the West. He's done a few things like this, but he's extremely well known and very well respected. All the German monks really respect his work. And he lives in Hamburg, I believe. Yeah, still alive, and he has his kind of group. They get together and have Dhamma discussions and things. Venerable Piya Dhamma really loved his stuff. And so does Jatamala. And so Bhikkhu Bodhi collected all of these things, edited them all up, and put them in this book on the great disciples of the Buddha. So a very inspiring and lovely collection of all the different information and stories and so on and so forth about the about the various great disciples. So, for example, here's the story of when Sariputta left his first teacher, Sanjaya. He became a stream enterer and then came back to Sanjaya and tried to convince Sanjaya to go forth under the Buddha. And Sanjaya replied, "You may go then, but I cannot." And Sariputta said, "Why not, teacher?" Sanjaya said, "I'm a teacher of many. If I were to revert to the state of a disciple, it would be as though a huge water tank were to change into a small pitcher of water. I cannot live the life of a pupil now." And Sariputta urged, "Do not think like that, teacher. Let it be, my dear. You may go, but I cannot." And then they said, "Oh, teacher, when a Buddha has appeared in the world, people flock to him in large crowds and pay homage to him, carrying incense and flowers. We too shall go there. Then what will happen to you?" To which Sanjaya replied, "What do you think, my pupils? Are there more fools in this world or more wise people?" And Sariputta replied, "Fools there are many, O teacher, and the wise are few." Sanjaya replied, "If that is so, my friends, then the wise ones will go to the wise recluse Gotama, and the fools will come to me, the fool." It's all about quantity, not quality. So I can't go through all of the stories and things in here. So this is. We'll just read this whole 500-page book right now. So it gives all the stories. And one of the things about Sariputta that always kind of strikes you is that he's such a great teacher. But many of the stories also talking about his, like that story with the little novice, or there's another story that when the monks always used to go for alms round, he always used to wait behind, and everyone else would go out and alms round, and then he'd take a quick trip around the monastery, and then just tidy up anything that needed to be tidied up, or clean. If there's anything that needed to be sweeped, he'd sweep it, or if there's anything that needed to be put away, he'd just put it away, and do all of that stuff before he went out on alms round. Yeah.
I thought that was you. You did that.
Me? No, I don't do that.
Because you've taught it to us.
No. I just teach it, I don't actually practice it. Yeah. And
it's also so humble when people say, "Give us a teaching."
Right.
Like this one, and then he says, "Give us some check what the Buddha says."
Yeah. So this is Sariputta, and of course he had a somewhat variable career in later Buddhism, and became a bit of the butt of the jokes in some texts like the Vimalakirti Nirdesha, which Robert Thurman likes to quote from, where Sariputta becomes the fool and the butt of everyone's jokes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Because he wasn't high enough. Yeah, no.
They were just like, because he was so sweet.
Oh, well, the story of the Vimalakirti Nirdesha is that there was a great bodhisattva called Vimalakirti. And he sent the message to the Buddha and the monks that he was sick, and asked if one of the monks could pay him a visit. And the Buddha said, "Any monks want to pay him a visit?" And all of the monks refused, because they knew that they'd be defeated in argument if they went to see Vimalakirti. So they're all terrified of going to see him. And of course, this was just another skillful means of him as a bodhisattva, pretending that he was ill. And they all pronounced themselves incapable of going and wishing Vimalakirti well. Okay, and giving him a blessing. They said they're not capable of it. And eventually it went around the whole thing, and finally somebody agreed to do it. I can't remember, who was it? Manjushri. I think it was Manjushri. Agreed that he would do it. And so everyone came along because they thought it was going to be a really good contest. So they were all coming along to see Vimalakirti. And they get to his house and they knock on the door, knock, knock. And he says, nobody's here. And then Sariputta says, what do you mean nobody's here? I can hear your voice. Of course Sariputta being the literalist. And they go in there, and then Sariputta like refuses to sit down on a low seat. He has to sit on the highest seat, and he's kind of full of conceit and so on. And keeps on getting bested in arguments because he takes things very literally. And then finally he suffers the ultimate humiliation. He gets actually changed into a woman by the servant girl. Vimalakirti's servant girl is actually a very high-level bodhisattva who's more spiritually advanced than Sariputta is. So she changes him into a woman to teach him a lesson. And,
But he actually doesn't.
Have you ever forgotten?
It's
embarrassing or what?
What?
Well, you haven't finished the story.
Oh, look, it's a long sutra. It goes on and on and on. Yeah. He gets turned back again. But I mean, the whole point was that by that stage, I don't think anyone seriously thought that was really what Sariputta was like or anything like that, but at that stage he'd become it was used as like a symbol of kind of the old fashioned, what was regarded as the old fashioned monk, and he was like, you know, a figure of fun, you know, in that kind of sense. And you know, he was a representative of the monks who they saw around them. Yeah. So it's actually describing the monks who they saw in that time. Yeah, but of course, putting it back in the form of Sariputta. So, so a story I heard was at one of the conferences in America that some of the people, some of the more Theravadins in the group, said that the Vimalakirti Sutra shouldn't be taught, or that because it disparaged the Arahants, and so Robert Thurman got up and gave an impassioned defense of the Vimalakirti Sutra. And he finished his defense by saying, and anyway, the Arahants, they can take it. But always in these things is I think that they get taken much more literally by the later people than they do by the people who are doing it. The Vimalakirti Sutra is actually a very sophisticated piece of writing. You know, it's a very kind of ironic and humorous piece of satire, and was never really meant to be taken literally. Anyway, so Sariputta, and he's always described as the Sariputta who is like unto the teacher himself, okay, which is the highest praise for any disciple. Mahamoggallana, so yeah, I think I mentioned a little while ago that the Venerable Tansona said that his impression was always Sariputta was like, you know, wearing a shirt and tie and short haircut and carrying a briefcase, and Mahamoggallana was like wearing a flowery shirt with long curly hair and carrying a guitar. And that was the this is the difference between the two. And of course they were born and brought up in the same village or neighbouring, very very near to each other, and were very close friends from childhood, both brought up in Brahmanical families. And then they went forth together under Sanjaya, who we just saw briefly there. Sanjaya being the great skeptic, he was the one who refused to say anything about anything, and also not to say anything about anything either. And so then they converted to the Buddha and became Buddhist monks very early on in the Sasana. That was when the Buddha first returned to Rajagaha. So they were among the first generation of disciples. Both of them, of course, predeceased the Buddha. And although in the Buddha's lifetime they were very often or normally carrying on the role of the, you know, actually running and managing the Sangha, but they weren't able to continue that after the Buddha passed away because they died before him. Anuruddha, we've met in the last few weeks, being one of the Sakyan princes, who went forth together with Ananda and Devadatta and so on. And he was the one who wanted to stay at home, but then when he heard about how hard the farming work was going to be, he decided he had to go forth as a monk. So this is Anuruddha. Revata. Revata was declared to be the foremost in jhana practice, and he's also known as Gangha Revata, Revata the doubter. And he was the one who doubted about whether there was wheat included, flour included in the, to harden the lumps of sugar, okay, and whether that was allowable in the afternoon, okay. And Venerable Ananda, of course, we all know, also the Buddha's cousin, probably about 20 or so, 20, 30 years younger than the Buddha, and the Buddha's great attendant for the later half of his life.
What's that ending on his Ananda? That, is that an ERA or ENA?
ENA.
Or does that make it disnominative?
No.
Well, what should make it?
Instrumental.
What?
Instrumental.
Uh-oh.
It's the same as the ehi. Ehi is plural. Ena is. Ena is singular. We'll do ehi later. You can look forward to it.
What was Magalana renowned for? In the Bhikkhu Bodhi talks about the Abhidharma that he did the beginnings of it.
We'll come to that. That's an interesting point. We'll come to a bit later on. Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that
Sariputta's
cousin or nephew as well?
Yeah. Quite possibly. Yeah. I'm not sure about that. Chunda certainly was. Revata. I'm not sure.
Was it
Chunda,
the chariot driver?
No, that's Channa. Or Chunda. Okay, so they're all hanging out in the park doing their meditation.
Doing ehi, 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 four of them.
And then... Which is actually an interesting linguistic point, as it happens, because, you know, you can see that oops, there we go, oops. You've got all these ehis, for example, and it might be many other things. Now, people, again, because people are lazy, which I talked about the other week, then they tend to drop them off. Yeah, so this is one of the ways that language actually erodes, is because rather than having to repeat the same ending if you've got a list, then it becomes easier to just bong them all together and then just have the ending once, yeah? And so the language is one of the things that causes the language to actually erode. But what the repetition does to, it creates redundancy in the language. So there's a superfluity of meaning. It's telling you the same thing again and again and again, which means that if there's a mistake somewhere, it's easy to fix it up. Yeah? And it also means that it's something that we can tell when we're reciting it, that when you get those lists, so for example, a bit down here, we've got some more ehis, Parimandalehi, Parabhyanjanehi, Appabadhehi, and then you have that rhythm, yeah. So it creates a rhythm in the prose, and that's used in the prose things, and is quite consciously used in the verses as well. Okay, so when all the monks had gathered together, Venerable Sariputta saw the Venerable Revata and the Venerable Ananda coming in the distance, and said to Venerable Ananda, "Let the Venerable Ananda come. Welcome to the Venerable Ananda, the Blessed One's attendant, who is always in the Blessed One's presence. Friend Ananda, the Gosinga Sala tree wood is delightful. The night is moonlit. The Sala trees are all in blossom, and heavenly scents seem to be floating in the air. What kind of bhikkhu, friend Ananda, could illuminate the Gosinga Sala tree wood?"
Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful language for arahants.
Yeah, Ananda, sir. So...
Wouldn't they be more poetic than most? Wouldn't an arahant be?
Well, apparently so, yeah.
How would it? Unless they take something like it's suitable for striving Gaudiya. Yeah.
I won't say anything. Etu! Okay, so come! Venerable Ananda. So here come Venerable Ananda is the, again, the nominative case. Ramaniyam, delightful, lovely, beautiful. Ramani is a common word for names in Indian and Sri Lankan, meaning lovely. Ramaniyam avuso, friend Ananda, Gosinga Sala Vana. The Gosinga Sala tree would Dosina Ratti. So the night is, as he translated this, moonlit. Okay. Dosina Ratti. Sabba Pali Pulla Sala. The Sala trees are all in blossom. Okay. Nibba, remember that the Sala trees, when the Buddha passed away, the Sala trees came out in blossom. Dibba manye gandha sampavanti. It's as if manye, one would think, one would imagine. Yeah? Dibba manye, manye is used as, you'd imagine that. They were divine, dibba gandha, divine scents floating through the air, sampavanti. So, of course, this being part of the mythology of the divine in Indian thought is you have, for example, the Gandhabba, who Gandhabba is the literally one literal way of understanding it is as the fragrant ones, okay? And these are, of course, the divine musicians. Actually, it probably doesn't come from that root, but it becomes associated with it later. The Gandhabba is probably the Sanskrit Gandharva, which is probably the Greek Gantara, which we call the centaur. But Dibba is divine, okay? It's related to Deva, okay? This is just the adjective form from Deva. Dibba Gandha Sampavanti. So the beautiful divine fragrances float in the air. So it's felt that when the Devas are around, that their scent was very beautiful. And on the contrary, whenever they have to be forced to experience human scent, that this is less than beautiful from their perspective. One of the reasons why devas don't hang around humans all that much, except if they're wearing perfume. And
we have a couple of trees which have such a perfume in the evening.
Yeah.
Crappy little trees, and you know, and one branch is broken desperately. I thought if you know we could bandage it up, but
Oh, yeah, you're most welcome to. So you can go there and read this sutta there. And also it's something that people still say today, you know, you still have monks who sort of tell their stories of when they're staying in the forest or in the open koti or something in the middle of the night, and then they have the fragrance and sometimes hear the sound of the devas or whatever. So here, for example, the verb here is sampavanti, is to float through the air. Now this is a plural form of the verb. Nti, before we had viharati, so the ati is the ending, singular ending, the anti is the plural ending. So there are many scents floating through the air, and this is why we have gandha, long A, meaning here plural. Okay, so gandha is a short A. One scent in nominative would be gandho, and many scents in nominative is gandha. Okay, so we saw earlier that there are other singular forms that also have the long A. So, for example, Bhagava also has a long A, and in that case is singular. Or Ayasma has a long A ending, and this is singular. This one has a long A ending indicating plural. So this is just to keep it difficult for you all. Okay? It looks the same, but in fact is expresses different. So this is why the grammarian is very clever to actually figure all these things out, you know. We have to learn it, but to actually figure out what is the relationship between these things is not at all obvious. So Gandha
is
Dibba,
it said accusative or something of Deva.
No, it's an adjective. It's an adjective form. But this is also a nominative plural, Dibba Gandha. Adjectives and nouns are declined in the same way in Pali. Okay, so divine scents. Now in English, we don't say divine's scents. Okay, we only decline the noun. Okay, we only put the plural on the noun form. Whereas in Pali, you put the plural on both of them. The divine's scents. So again, this being another example of this redundancy. Yeah, You've actually expressed the plural here three times. Divines, sense, and the verb also expresses the plural. So you've expressed the plural three times. Yeah. Again, this being one of the reasons why the language erodes, and so you end up actually, you know, in many cases, you don't need to express it at all. So languages like Thai and Chinese, monosyllabic languages, only express the plural or the number when they want to. They don't have to at all. They can just leave it vague. Yeah. And then when they want to express it as a singular or plural, then they can just put an extra word in there. So that's the most efficient way of doing it. Although sometimes it does lead to ambiguity.
Sampavanti is one word.
Sampavanti is one word, yeah.
Sampavanti.
Vanti, yeah. The root here is from the same root, I think from the same root, vaya, air. So it's like floating through the air. Katang rupena. Okay, so katang is what? Rupa. Here, not the sights, rupa, and not the physical body, rupa, but meaning sort or type. Okay, a very common meaning of rupa, katang rupa. What kind of bhikkhu would illuminate subheya? So this being the root here is bha, meaning light. And so this being a verb form derived from that, and subha, good light, illuminating, illustrating, yeah, filling it with luster, yeah. And elsewhere it's said that the fourfold assembly, because bhikkhunis, laymen, laywomen, illuminate the Buddha's dispensation. So, idhavaso Sariputta bhikkhu. Here, Sariputta, a bhikkhu is bahusuto hoti sutadharo sutta sannivayo. Okay, here, friend Sariputta, a monk is learned much, remembers what he's learned, and consolidates what he's learned. Remembers it, dhara, holds it in his mind. Right? Sutta sannivayo, and consolidates it, puts it all together. Okay, now, bahusuto, here we have the nominative. So a monk is, hoti, bahusuto, sutadharo, sutta sannivayo. And so these are all, they all agree with each other. So actually, we mentioned before that the verb often comes at the end. Actually, you could take the verb out here and just put the verb at the end. Okay? But this is a very characteristic that the verb comes in the middle of a list. It's actually, this is a list, 1, 2, 3 terms there. Bahusuto, sutta dharo, sutta sannivayo. He's very learned, remembers what he's learnt, and consolidates what he's learnt. But the verb comes in the middle of the list. All of these being declined in nominative singular, masculine nominative singular. Now they, the actual operative, these are all adjectives, of course, much learned and so on. They're describing the bhikkhu. The noun is the bhikkhu. Okay? And the bhikkhu here is again nominative singular masculine. But because bhikkhu ends in a u, the form here appears as a singular u. Okay? So again, this is the same form, u here, it's the same form as o here, and it's the same form as a here, okay? Nominative singular.
We are saying diminutive.
Nominative.
Keep sounding like diminutive.
You're suffering from low self-esteem, Eva.
But how do you get it in his mind? Was that the
Dhara? Dhara,
yeah. Dhara.
Vinayadhara, yeah. Dhara is literally to hold something.
Sutta is
hearing. Hearing, yeah. What it means, what is heard. So this word, the word here, sutta, it's a little bit confusing because it's, when you say it, it sounds like the word sutta, as in the suttas that the Buddha taught, and it has a similar meaning, yeah. But here, sutta with one T means what is heard. Okay? So he is heard, literally has heard much. Okay? What has he heard? Well, of course, he's heard the suttas. Yeah? So it's a bit confusing as the, if you're not used to that. But sutta as a discourse is always two T's, or with a TR in Sanskrit, sutra. Okay? Okay, those dhammas, yete dhamma. Adi Kalyana, Madhe Kalyana, Pariyosana Kalyana, which are lovely in the beginning, lovely in the middle, and lovely in the end. Satha, with the meaning. Sabhyanjana, with the letter or the way of expression. Kevala Paripurnang, complete, fulfilled, purified, holy life. Abhivadanti, they Abhivadanti, he expresses, or are expressed. How was the same that? Which affirm, perhaps, Abhivadanti. Affirm a holy life, Abhivadanti. Those dhammas, he is much learned and remembers them. Vachasa Parichita has penetrated them with his mind, or how is it translated this? He has remembered much, investigated with the mind, Parichita. Manusa Pekhita. Mastered verbally. Vachasa Parichita is mastered verbally. Manusanupekhita is investigated with the mind. Okay, so here manusa is the mind, and pekita anupekita is to investigate or to look in. Dhyaya, with view. Supatividha is rightly penetrated. Okay, and then he teaches the dhamma. So again, we have to change the order around. He, so dhammang deseti, he teaches the dhamma to the fourfold assembly. Okay, with well-rounded and coherent statements, well-mounted. Parimandalehi, parabhyanjanehi. Okay, parimandala, of course, mandala, yeah, is the rounded statements. Yeah, parabhyanjanehi. And coherent statements and phrases for the eradication of the underlying tendencies. Anusayam samugahataya. So for eradication of the underlying tendencies. Anusaya. So in this particular sentence, the nominative is the so. He. Okay, so it's just a particle. So it's sort of referring back to the bhikkhu of the up here. So he teaches the... That's right, three so far. And so this is the kind of bhikkhu who would illuminate the Gosenga wood tree. So here, of course, Venerable Ananda is focusing on the learning of the Dhamma. And notice the different characteristics of that, that one has heard the stuff. So first of all, one has actually listened to the teachings and to those right teachings, and then investigated that with one's view, considered it, and then once one's done that, you've digested it internally, then also teaching and helping others. But not teaching and helping others just for the sake of, you know, earning an income or whatever, but for the sake of getting rid of the underlying tendencies. This is why the getting rid of the defilements. This is the purpose.
The underlying tendencies is defilements.
Yeah, and I say, yeah.
That's that whole word.
Anusaya is the underlying tendencies. Samughataya is for the eradication of.
What cat is that?
Which?
Anusaya samughataya.
Samughataya is the dative. Yeah, for the. Yeah? For the eradication of.
Why is there many occasions where the wife?
Ending of YA, yeah, similar. This is actually the ending here is Aya, long AYA, yeah. But yeah, there's many like Sobhya down here as well, and so others, yeah. Now, when this was said, Venerable Sariputta addressed the Venerable Revata thus: Friend Revata, the Venerable Ananda has spoken according to his own inspiration. So this is another one I think I skipped out of the printed version. But yathasakam patibhanam. Okay, so he has vyakatang. Remember I spoke earlier about the different categories of the teaching, sutta, geya, and vyakarana. Here is the vyakatang, again the disciple answering a question, and this is called vyakatang, vyakarana. Yathasakang patibhanang, according to his own Patibhana, inspiration. Okay? So the Patibhana is the inspiration. This is what happens to poets when they get, they have this phrase in Pali, kaveya matta, which means drunk on poetry. Okay? So when you get drunk on poetry, and you're all kind of dreaming, and then it pours out of you and you can't help it, and you don't even know what you're saying. This is like the Patibhana. And in, they have this category, fourfold category, they call the four Patisambhidas. Is the Patisambhidha means the analysis or something like that. And there are four of them, the Dhamma, the Atta, the Niruti, and the Patibhana. Dhamma meaning, in this case, meaning the text, okay? So learning the actual, what is the teaching, okay? Atta is the meaning of that teaching, right? And Niruti is the language, so it's being able to linguistically understand what the teaching is. And the Patibhana is being able to put all those things together intuitively, yeah, to digest and put them together intuitively and spontaneously come out with some inspired Dhamma. Yeah, this is the Patibhana. And so these are four Dhammas which are to be developed by somebody who wants to be a Dhamma teacher.
And this awesome Patibhana is in one of the blessing chants we do at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
That one also has having given.
Yeah. Patibhana do?
Yeah,
Patibhana. Yep. So according to his own Patibhana. Now, he asked Revata, what? Revata. Who? Yeah. He's saying that Ananda spoke according to his own Patibhana. And so now what's your Revata's? Well, how, what kind of bhikkhu would illuminate this delightful wood? And he says, here, a bhikkhu is pati salana ramo hoti, pati salana rato. Okay? So here again, bhikkhu being nominative. Bhikkhu is pati salana ramo, one who delights in seclusion. So we saw before that all the monks were sitting in pati salana before the discourse started. So there's one who delights in that. And rata, also a synonym meaning to delight in that, okay? And the same characteristic we noticed before, the verb is now in the middle of the two adjectives rather than at the end. Adhatang teto samatamanu yutto, internally, devoted, anuyutta, attached, tied up to, samata, of the heart, teto, ani rakata jhano, not neglecting, jhana, vipassanaya samanagato, endowed with vipassana, bruheta sunyagaranam, and cultivates or associates or lives in empty dwellings. So this, of course, having two meanings, one being living in seclusion and also being using the higher meaning of emptiness also can apply there. This kind of bhikkhu, okay? So we've met these phrases earlier in some of these suttas, I think in the first 10, I think it was at the...
At the beginning of this one, that word was retreat.
Akankheya Sutta. Retreat. So this is Venerable Revata's response.
It's funny because he's meant to be foremost in jhana, but the way Bhikkhu Bodhi translates, not neglecting
of jhana,
he translates as meditation.
Yeah.
Well, because he also talks about vipassana. In that first
genre, but that's not what it means in this context. That vipassana means insight practice, but vipassana means jhana.
Yeah. It's just obscured in the translation. It's true because he said he delights in solitary meditation, which is patisalana, and then it says does not neglect meditation in the same sentence, which is a completely different word. Is jhana. Yeah? So,
and also he's meant to be foremost in jhana, so he wouldn't say meditation as such, he would say jhana.
Yeah, and meditation is a very bad translation of jhana. I mean, jhana is really the kind of the outcome of the meditation practice. Yeah. Okay. Then Sariputta said to Venerable Anuruddha. Okay, so Revata has spoken according to his own inspiration, and Venerable Anuruddha, how do you imagine that a bhikkhu would illuminate this Gosinga Salavana? So here's how he put it, a bhikkhu, okay, again, nominative singular, a bhikkhu looks olokheti. So here it agrees with this verb here, the looks. Okay, and here of course olokheti being not dissimilar to the word to look at something. Okay, so he looks down at the sahasang lokanang, the thousandfold worlds, okay, with, and here we have the instrumental again, with the divine eye that is purified and surpasses the human.
This Avalokiteshvara, this kind of passage, it's like,
yeah,
kind of like that, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. This is Avalokiteshvara.
Down upon Avalokiteshvara.
Yep, exactly. That's probably where it came from.
What's the word Atikantam?
Ati kanta manusakena. Ati kanta manusakena. No, that's man. Human. As you can see, the words for mind and for human are very the same, very similar. Manusak. Okay, so ati is more than, beyond. Okay? Kanta is to go. So ati kanta is gone beyond the human. Okay? Manusa, and then the ending, aka, is ish. Okay? And then the ana is the, so it's the beyond human ish eye. Right? Just as, seyatapi, I was a jakuma puriso. Okay? So here again, the nominative singular, puriso, meaning man, nominative singular, masculine. Now you might think it's obvious that the word for man should be declined in a masculine form, right? But however, this is not at all obvious because the word for woman is also declined in a masculine form. Well, one of the words for woman. No, iti, matugama. So not at all obvious. But anyway, puriso, masculine singular. A, not only a puriso, a jakuma puriso, a man with eyes. And here again the ma ending being nominative singular, agreeing with the jakuma puriso. And so this being the noun, an adjective, and another adjective here. Upari pasada varagato. So notice that this, the previous adjective is more intimately linked with the man, right? He's a man with good eyes, yeah? And so that's more like an intimately part of him. And it happens to be the case that he's gone up to the top of his palace, okay? And so the more intimately linked adjective comes before the noun, and then the more distantly linked adjective comes afterwards, okay? Jakuma puriso upari pasada varagato, okay? So he's gone up to the top story of his upper palace chamber. Now, sahasang nemi mandalanang olokeya. He might see a thousand, right? Nemi mandalas. Mandala is a circle. Nemi is the wheel rim, right?
Yeah, what does that mean?
He's like a king who goes to the top of his palace,
yeah,
down all his troops, and he sees all his chariots and all their...
Uh-huh.
Now, you'd see them if you went down to the cellar.
No.
Why would you see them if you went down to the cellar?
Because there you'd see the wheel rims. You don't see wheel rims when you're in the top story.
It's true, because they're underneath there at the bottom of the chariot.
Stars. It was night time, I'd say stars.
Nemi mandalam, perhaps stars, yeah. So I don't know whether Nemi can mean stars.
So it's just like a wheel turning monarch, for example, I'm sure it's not talking about chariot wheels.
Yeah, maybe because he has a big thing, but he has a big army. So but it does seem a bit odd. You have to admit. How do you think we might be able to resolve the problem? Okay, so far I haven't referred to the Chinese yet, because it's just the same as the Pali. Now in this case, in regard to Anuruddha, according to the Pali version, he compared being able to serve a thousand worlds with the divine eye to being able to survey a thousand concentric circles. We're quite where Venerable Nalio's got that translation, concentric circles. It doesn't really say that. It says Nemi Mandala, which is the wheel rims, as Bhikkhu Bodhi has. Yeah.
Maybe you saw him in galaxies.
Yeah, maybe. Where did those Bhikkhu Bodhi have wheel rims? Yeah. So, what have we got? An expression which in the Pali is a little obscure. In the Madhyama Agama, he speaks instead of surveying 1,000 clay tiles on the ground below. So in India at that time, they typically didn't use burnt bricks and tiles, they used to sun dry them. And so it would probably have been a common sight to see the tiles or the bricks laid out on the ground below, so you could actually ascend and then look down and see them all down there. And not being a bad simile for a world either, because they're made of clay, and it's like the earth. Maybe.
Don't they get make all these heaps of mud bricks in these like a mold?
Yeah.
And then they take the molds out, let them all dry in the sun.
Yeah, like mud bricks. The two other Chinese versions have different similes. Since, according to the Akhotra Agama version, Anuruddha compared his ability to looking in the sky. Yeah. So
I didn't reference the Chinese
one. Yeah, you just use your divine inspiration. So obviously Venerable Jagannatha's previously belonged to the Mahasanghikas, so he's
bring on the food in the afternoon, that's all I
can. That means no, it doesn't mean that, but it does mean you are allowed to lip your licks while eating your food. They don't have
lick your lips.
Okay. Even. You're allowed to lick your lips.
Snack them.
They were exponents of lip licking laxity.
You're practicing those four things.
So there you go.
Yeah. So they didn't have that
secret. They didn't have that secret. No. Now, the individual translation was looking. Standing looking in a high building and seeing the people coming and going below. The individual translation thereby closely resembles the standard illustration for the exercise of the divine eye found in the Pali discourses, which speaks of standing on a high building and seeing people below walk on the road and enter or leave a house. The similes found in the Pali and the Madhyama Agama versions are, however, more specifically fitted to the present context, which is concerned with Anuruddha's ability to survey up to 1,000 worlds with the divine eye, a specification of the spatial extent of his ability, which does not form part of the standard descriptions of the divine eye. So make of that what you will. Individual translation is more standard, but perhaps is less likely for that very reason. Sometimes they would, if there was a different one, they would standardize the difficult reading. This is a classic principle used in text critical studies. I can't remember how to pronounce the Latin. They call it lecito difficultur or something. I'm not sure how to pronounce the Latin. I have to get one of our Latin classical scholars to inform us of this. And do you know that phrase? No. Okay. Well, we won't ask that if you know. That's right. And which is basically the principle that the difficult reading or the unexpected reading is to be preferred. Okay. Because of more of a it's not a universal principle, but just a rule of thumb. So maybe the clay tiles, maybe the Nemi Manda, maybe looking up in the sky. Hard to say. Okay. Now, so Anuruddha, and of course, this being very famous, Anuruddha's great quality was his mastery of the divine eye. Now, sorry.
A nice little story before he gets enlightened.
Remember
the one where he...
Yeah.
All the world systems and everything.
Okay. Hang on. Don't spoil it. Okay. I think I've got that sutra in here. Okay. One day, so presumably after the Upakilesa Sutta, we talked about it the other time, he went to Sariputta and said to him, "From Sariputta, with the divine eye that is purified, transcending human sight, I can see the thousandfold world system. My energy is firm and unremitting. My mindfulness is alert and unconfused. My body is tranquil and unperturbed. My mind is concentrated and one-pointed, and yet my mind is not freed from the defilements, not freed from clinging. Thereupon, Sariputta replied, "Friend Anuruddha, that you think thus of your divine eye, this is your conceit. When you think thus of your firm energy, your alert mindfulness, your unperturbed body, and your concentrated mind, this is your restlessness. And that you think of your mind not being freed of the defilements, this is your whinging. It would be good, indeed, if you were to abandon these three states of mind and, paying no attention to them, direct your mind to the deathless element Nibbana."
That is really
good.
I mean, that's really interesting because it sounds like he was saying, "Look, this is what's in my mind," you know? Mm. And Sariputta is saying, "Oh no, that's not the right way to say it." I mean, maybe it has to do with the translation, because you know, in the Satipatthana Sutta, it's like, there's joy in my mind, there's not joy in my mind.
Oh yeah.
So it sounds like that's what he alluded to. This is what's in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess that's the underlying tendencies
to conceive.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the Sariputta. He just
said
that's whinging. It's the same Sariputta who's whinging about not sitting on the high seat.
Okay. One of Anuruddha's other great qualities, by the way, is mastery of the four Satipatthanas. And in fact, that's all through the Anuruddha Sanyutta is basically entirely about his practice of four Satipatthanas. Now, when this was said, Sariputta said to Mahakasapa, "Okay, everyone, get ready. What kind of bhikkhu is going to illuminate? Right here, friend Sariputta, one oneself is Aranyaka Hoti, a bhikkhu, okay? Atana, by oneself, is Aranyako Hoti. Okay, so he is a monk, nominative singular, is Aranyaka, is the adjective, also a nominative singular. Aranyaka tasacha varnavadi. Okay, he is a speaker of living in, a speaker in praise of living in the forest. So here, vadi is also a nominative singular. Okay, ending with a long I. So he is a praise, varna, color, class, caste, praise, and speaker. He is a speaker, a vadi, in praise of living in the forest. Okay? Kasapu was also a lover of wildflowers.
Was he?
Yeah.
Where did you get that from?
These verses in the Theragata.
He sounds so suspicious of you now, Bhante. It's like, what are you making up here?
This is the guy who selects likes to wear, you know, bark or something as a robe and sword.
Atana cha pindapatiko hoti. Oneself is a pindapatika. He eats pindapat food. Pindapatika tasa cha varnavadi and speaks in praise of eating pindapat food. Varnavadi. Himself is aware of picked up discarded robes like that green hat that I found the other day. Thanks, Uncle, and speaker in praise of wearing picked up green hats. And how's your Venerable Tapasi, you were sewing a robe out of your all the bits of stuff? What's that, whatever happened to that project? Is it completed or?
When I used to collect rags, I got laughed at.
Who did to laugh at you? Send them to see Kasapa. They'll know, make them laugh.
No, everyone knew laughed at me. So then I got very shy about that. And so then also I did make a robe with all different patches on it.
Yeah.
And, however, I left it in Melbourne by accident at the retreat centre. So I don't have it anymore. I relinquished it.
Right.
Start again.
You mean I went to all that effort to pick up those bits of dirty, greasy rags off the side of the road for you? Okay. Oh, I'm sure somebody else will delight in it. Okay. Oneself is a te jivariko, three-robe wearer. Okay, so that means that one doesn't have any extra bits of things like jackets or jumpers or anything like that, just the three robes and nothing else. Okay, so it's quite a strict practice to wear just the three robes. For example, you know, what do you do when they get dirty? Right? You've got to wash them somehow.
These kinds of things.
Yeah. You've got to wash them one at a time and wear the other ones while they're being washed. So, atana cha apicho hoti apichataya cha varnavari. One is of few wishes, apicho. And notice, of course, we have our friend Apichato, who I argued with strenuously that it was an incorrect form of his name, and it's actually apicho, as is exemplified here in the nominative singular masculine apicho. However, instead of the entirely invented form which doesn't exist in Pali, apichato. Okay, nevertheless, reason failed to win the day. Okay, apichataya to Wanawadi. Speak in praise of fewness of wishes. Oneself content. Santotto. Santottiya Javarnavari. And so this is the word Santotta here is related to the Tusita Devas, the contented Devas. Oneself is secluded and speaks in praise of seclusion. Oneself is not hanging around in company all the time and speaks in praise of not hanging around in company. Oneself is of aroused up energy, aradha viryo, and speaks in praise of the arousal of energy. Oneself is of endowed with virtue and speaks in praise of virtue. Oneself is endowed with samadhi and speaks in praise of being endowed with samadhi. Oneself is endowed with wisdom. Oneself is endowed with release, vimutti. And oneself endowed with vimutti jnana dasana, the knowledge and vision of release. Okay, so here we see like two rather different kinds of things here. The first group, more or less up to rousing of energy or virtue, is the group. Well, let's start out with the ascetic practices. Okay, so the first one is living in the forest, dwelling on alms food, the three robes wearers. So these things are the rag robe wearers and three robe wearers. So that's four of the what we call dudanga practices or the ascetic practices. Okay, and then these next ones are not so much ascetic practices but just generally good qualities to be developed of being secluded and having few wishes and so on and having energy and so on, and that's leading up to there. And then from sila onwards we have a more or less straightforward exemplification of the path we've seen in many suttas so far, in the Ratanvinita Sutta and many others, and the Mahanchula Sarokama Suttas we've been looking at, Sila, Samadhi, Panya, release and knowledge and vision of release. So this last one being the reviewing knowledge, the one that can looks back at the one's own freedom and understands what that freedom means. So this is Venerable Mahakasapa. There's some differences in the Chinese versions here, nothing too drastic, yeah.
No Sanskrit version of this?
No. Okay. Right.
Okay, so Pano is knowledge and vision.
Vimutti, no, release.
Oh, release.
Endowed with, Sampana is endowed with. Okay. Now, when this was said, okay, Mahamoggallana, Kasapa's had his say. Now, what do you reckon? Here, Vansari put it, two bhikkhus. So here we have dwe bhikkhu, and so all the other ones are talking about one bhikkhu, and here the bhikkhu with a long u. So now this is nominative plural, okay, with a u stem. So if the stem ends in u, the plural nominative is long u, just as if it's a stem ending in a, the plural nominative plural is long a, which we saw earlier.
Now we come to the controversial part.
Now we come to the controversial part, yeah. So, two bhikkhus, abhi dhamma katang katenti. So here again, the plural form, here is the enti of the plural form of the verb, plural form here, and we're told that there's two bhikkhus. So three times in those little words we're told that there's two of them, or two or more. So this is, again, the redundancy of the Pali grammar. So the redundancy is helpful because often, because the forms are so variable, and it is difficult to work out, you know, we've been dealing with some simple ones, but often it's quite difficult to figure out actually what case is there. So often, you know, maybe if you can't recognize this one, then you know from the verb, oh, hang on, it must be a plural, you know, or the other way around. If you can't recognize the verb form, maybe you know from the noun that it must be plural, yeah? So these things, they do help. And so they were discussing the Abhidhamma, okay? So notice the word katang, katenti, is the discussion, is what's going on. And in the Abhidhamma you have the katawatu, is the points of discussion, which is what the monks would have been talking about. And so here, what does Abhidhamma mean? So this is one of the... There's a few passages in the early suttas that means that uses the word Abhidhamma, and of course it being quite controversial about what it actually means. The traditional Theravadan view, of course, being that it means the Abhidhamma Pitaka, and most or all of modern scholars disagree with that particular finding. So though they ask themselves questions, asking each other, anyamanyam, one another, panyam putanti, ask one another questions, and having asked one another the questions, they reply, no cha sangsadenti, which means without foundering, okay, without sinking down, okay, dhammi cha ne sankatha pavattani hoti, and their discussion on the Dhamma rolls along, okay, pavattani, their discussion on the Dhamma just rolls along. They're each asking each other questions, and they're each able to answer the question without foundering. Just like we saw in the Ratanavinita Sutta, yeah, where the two monks were asking each other questions and they're kind of rolling along the discussion, yeah? And so this giving us some idea of what Abhidhamma was for the early suttas, okay? It's when the bhikkhus were sitting down and discussing with each other and clarifying points of Dhamma and so on and so forth. And so this is what Abhidhamma was in those early days. And later on, of course, when they became codified and fixed in certain texts, then we call those texts the Abhidhamma Pitaka. So the prefix Abhi can mean higher, or often means higher. But in this way, it means perhaps something more like specialized or about, like it's discussing about the Dhamma in the sense that, you know, you've got the Dhamma as the basic teaching, so then you're talking about that, and this is the Abhidhamma. Of course, you often have the pair in the early texts, Abhidhamma, Abhivinaya, right? Abhidhamma and Abhivinaya. But of course, there's no text which we call Abhivinaya. Yeah? So what's the Abhivinaya? Well, presumably the Abhivinaya is something like what we have in what we call the Vinaya, with the actual discussion of definitions of terms and discussion of all the refined points and things like that. And this is the Abhivinaya, which has the same relation to the Vinaya, which may be like the Patimokkha and the basic rules, has the same relationship as Abhidhamma has to Dhamma. So now coming back to Arena's question a bit earlier about Moggallana. Now, Moggallana is not regarded as being one of the founders of the Abhidhammas, generally speaking, although he is associated in certain schools with doing some Abhidhamma texts. But that's probably more conventional rather than anything else. It's because they tended to get all the Abhidhamma texts and attribute them. This is in the Sarvasivadin school. They attributed them all to different disciples. And so Mahamoggallana got assigned one of them. I can't remember which one now. But that's probably more conventional than anything. So what's going on here? Now, Venerable Analio has the discussion here. Blah, blah, blah. Right. Mahagosinga Sutta next reports Mahamoggallana speaking in praise of the ability of two monks to reply to each other on questions about deeper aspects of the Dhamma without foundering. Although, in a way, all the disciples mentioned in the present discourse would be able to answer such questions on the deeper aspects of the teaching, this type of ability does not appear to be a typical trait of Mahamoggallana, whom the list of eminent disciples found in the Anguttara Nikaya and at its parallel in the Akotara Agama extol for his exercise of supernormal powers, the Iddhi. Hence, it comes as no surprise that all three Chinese parallels have Mahamoggallana extol such supernormal powers instead, including the ability to magically multiply oneself, fly through the air, pass through solid earth, etc. This would indeed seem to be a more authentic version of his pronouncement on this occasion. Okay? And regarding the statement that extols the ability to answer certain questions on deeper aspects of the teaching, the Madhyama Agama version attributes a closely similar statement to Mahakachana, whom such a reply would fit much better. According to the same list of eminent disciples in the Anguttara, Mahakachana was outstanding for his skill in explaining short sayings in detail, while its parallel in the Ekotara Agama extols his ability to discriminate the meaning and teach the path. In view of this, it seems that if during the process of oral transmission, the Mahagosinga Sutta somehow lost the presence of Mahakachana at this meeting of great disciples, and what was originally his reply ended up in the mouth of Mahamoggallana instead. Okay?
It's traditionally something like that, aren't they?
Yeah. So
that makes more sense,
Mark, actually. Yeah, exactly. So it makes a lot of sense, actually. So they, it seems that they've lost a paragraph out of their... Analena says, in the course of oral transmission, although it seems to me just as likely that it should have fallen out, or perhaps even more likely that it should have fallen out in the written transmission as well. It could have been either.
It does make sense that for those who are very realized in the Dharma to have the capacity to investigate the more subtle parts of the Dharma and for that somehow to be the basis of something that's different than the kinds of teachings that the Buddha gave to the Sangha in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to lay people.
Yeah. Getting more specialised and discussing. And it's quite a common thing. You see that with the history of ideas generally. You know, say, you know, if you look at someone like Einstein or something, you know, they come up with this kind of great theory. Everyone sort of branches off from that. And in individual things, they're sort of discussing it in much more detail than he might have been, or Freud or whoever it might have been. And they're actually going into much more detail in individual things. Yeah. So, okay.
Isn't that interesting though, that Bhikkhu Bodhi didn't asterisk this in his notes?
He wouldn't have known about it at that time.
Oh, that this might have been an omission because Mahamoggallana is not usually.
Yeah. See, he didn't. He wasn't using the Chinese texts at all when he wrote the Madhyama, when he did the Madhyama study.
Even though you don't think he would have liked this, is it? Mahamoggallana isn't usually.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you might think that, or you might not. Might occur to you, might not. Yeah.
Almost 12 years ago.
Yeah. So Thich Nhat Hanh talks about it in his book, which was published in the '60s. So it was known about from then. But I don't think Bhikkhu Bodhi mentions Thich Nhat Hanh's book in here. He maybe wasn't aware of it at that stage. See, when at that time, up until he was doing this, he was very much centered in the Pali tradition, almost exclusively. And you see the difference in the Madhyama and then the Sangyutta, where he does refer to the Chinese text to some degree. And that's something he's sort of gradually sort of evolved with. But yeah, typically, you know, in that particular case, to me, in this particular case, it seems so clear that obviously, you know, it must have been that kind of mistake and it should be mentioned. But in some cases, you can't know just from the Pali tradition alone.
Is there any sutras where Mahamoggallana is teaching?
Yeah. Okay. So now, Mahamoggallana says to Sariputta, well, we've all had our say. Okay, and now it's your turn. What kind of bhikkhu would illuminate this Mahagosinga wood tree? And Sariputta says, yeah, a bhikkhu. So here the nominative is again the bhikkhu. He controls what deity? He exercises control over his mind. So here Chittang Vasang is in the accusative form. So this is the subject acts on the object here. Okay, so here there's no adjectives. And here it changes the form of it around. And it's not the case that the bhikkhu, by the power of his mind, is controlled. Okay? So a bhikkhu controls his own mind, he's not under the control of his mind. Okay? Whichever, vihara, so again, so is he, vihara, that's dwelling, meditative attainment, and that's samapati, attainment, akankati, whatever he wishes in the morning, pubarnha samayang, viharitong, to dwell in, taya vihara samapatiya, in that dwelling and attainment, he dwells in the morning. Whatever dwelling and attainment he wishes to dwell in the midday, he dwells in that in the midday. Whatever dwelling or attainment he wishes to dwell in the evening, he dwells in that in the evening. Okay? Just as, friend Moggallana, a king, Ranyu wa Raja Mahamata, or the king's minister, Nana Ratanang, many colours, Nana, we met the other week, or the other day, Nana, many colours, Rata, Dusanang, of clothes, okay. Dusa karandako. Let me see what that. Dusa karandako. Variously colored garments. Okay. Full puro asa. Okay. Had a chest. Oh, okay. Okay. Is the chest karandaka? Okay. Wardrobe. Okay. This is the wardrobe full of clothes. Full of them. Puro. Okay, so here Ranyo, the king, this being the whatever kind of dusa yugang of clothes he would wish to wear in the morning, he would put them in the morning. Whatever he wished to wear in the midday, he'd wear in the midday, and whatever he'd want to wear in the evening, he would wear in the evening. Okay. And so too the bhikkhu enters and dwells in any attainment that he might wish to attain in at any time. And this little passage, is very similar to a little passage in the Sanghita, which I'll...
It actually says that the lines from Moggallana and Sanghita have been swapped. Because I've heard that in Abhidhamma circles it is considered that the Buddha came down from two seats of heaven and gave the discourse of Abhidhamma.
To Sariputta, yeah.
And Sariputta's speech is actually Moggallana's. The in-depth analysis is more of the Sariputta.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Certainly Sariputta is very closely associated with the Abhidhamma, early Abhidhamma development, as was Mahakachayana. So we saw that the Chinese associated it with Mahakachayana, and so it could really be either. They're both associated with it. Certainly Sariputta was. But you're quite right, in that case it could be swapped, but it seems more likely because the Chinese has the extra one, that it's associated with that. But before you go on, let me just read this one. Okay. Sariputta said this: friends, there are these seven factors of enlightenment. Enlightenment factors of mindfulness, discrimination of dhammas, energy, rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. Whichever of these seven factors of enlightenment I want to dwell in during the morning, I dwell in that factor in the morning. Whichever I want to dwell in during the middle of the day, I dwell in that during the middle of the day. Whichever I want to dwell in that in the evening, I dwell in that in the evening. If it occurs to me, let the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, it occurs to me, it's measureless, it occurs to me, it's fully affected. I understand it persists while it persists, and if it ends in me, I understand it has ended me for such and such a reason. And the same with all the other enlightenment factors. Suppose, friends, a king or a royal minister had a wardrobe full of differently coloured clothes. Whatever clothes he wanted to wear in the morning, he would wear in the morning. Whatever he wanted to wear in the middle of the day, he would wear in the middle of the day. Whatever he wanted to wear in the evening, he would wear in the evening. So too, friends, whichever of these seven factors of enlightenment I want to dwell in the morning or in the middle of the day or in the evening, I dwell in that enlightenment factor. So you might be forgiven for thinking that there's a certain degree of similarity between this particular context and one there.
Moggallana as well.
Isn't there also, he comes out of the forest and then one says, oh, your faculties are clear and bright,
uh-huh.
And he asks him, oh, This is how I've been running in the first channel and second channel. So I put it with something else.
Could be, yeah.
You don't remember that one?
Vaguely.
Pretty impressive skill just to check world well and all the different patterns.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to say just to be able to make up your mind what kind of coloured clothes you wanted to wear.
I had to make that
choice
late this morning.
No, absolutely, yeah. Just do it, you know. Just sit down. Oh, third jhana sounds nice. You know? And just to do it. So this is one of the things about Sariputta, because he is... Of course, you know, renowned as the master of wisdom, but also, you know, he's a very well-rounded character. You actually learn more about him, you know, from the different perspectives, and this is kind of a rounded thing. So he's also, of course, a master of samadhi, as he's mentioning here. And so he has all these different kinds of abilities. He's not just one-dimensional character. Yeah. There's a lot of the other disciples, we really only know one aspect of them that they're most well-known for. Then, Sariputta. Again, nominative singular, Sariputta, Ayasma Sariputta, to those venerables, in accusative case, said this. So again, the verb at the end is the actor, or the doer, the doing, the action, and the one it's done to. Okay, the subject, the verb, and the object. Okay, so all of us have explained according to our inspiration. Let us go to the Blessed One and declare it, and then we'll see what he has to say about that. So they all went to the Blessed One, and when they said that, they told him of the circumstances, and he explained all of the different things. So first of all, explained what Venerable Ananda's praise of the monk who was very learned and who taught the four assemblies for eradication of defilements. And the Buddha replied, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sariputta. Just as Ananda has rightly, Vyākaramano Vyākareya, has rightly or well explained what should be explained. And Ananda is one who is very learned and learned in the scriptures and so on. And those dhammas that are beautiful in the beginning, the middle and the end, these he teaches to the four assemblies for the overcoming of all the underlying tendencies. So he's praising Ananda because Ananda is speaking about those good qualities which he in fact possesses. So even though he wasn't Ananda wasn't actually claiming that he had those qualities, but in fact he did have them, and these were the things that he was doing. And of course the same pattern is repeated for all of the other disciples, and the Buddha affirms that each of them has in fact got those disciples, those characteristics which they were speaking in praise of. Okay, so I won't read through all of the repetitions here. Up to the last one. No, that's not the last one. Up to the last one. Zipping along. And then... Now, and at the end of it, Venerable Sariputta said to the Blessed One... Okay, so again, Sariputta, nominative single, said to... He said to the Blessed One, accusative. Who spoke well? Okay? Whose was the good saying? All of you, Sariputta, spoke well in a way. Pariyaya. So this is a nice word in Pali, pariyaya. It's from the root I, to go. Okay, but the actual evil will be delighted that the root I doesn't actually exist in the word. Okay, but it is there, theoretically. Right? Pariyaya. And pari... meaning to go, and pari meaning all around. Okay, so pariyaya means around, or in a way of speaking. Okay, so you have a pariyaya in a way of speaking, in a roundabout sense. So in one way or another, in a roundabout way, they spoke well, each in his own well. Api cha mamapi. Okay, but now have a listen to what I say is going to be the kind of bhikkhu who's going to illuminate the Gosinga wood. Here, Sariputta, a bhikkhu, Pachha Bhattang, after the meal, Pindapata Patikanto, having returned from the alms round, Nisidati. Okay, so the bhikkhu, nominative, sits. Okay, Palankang Abhujitwa, having sit down cross-legged, Udunkayang Pamidhaya, having set the body straight, Parimukhang Sating Upathapetva. Okay, and establishes mindfulness in front of him. So, of course, this being the classic phrase which we've met before in the context of the gradual training and the Satipatthana Sutta and the practice of Anapanasati and so on, and just means to sit down and do meditation. And so this being one of the cases where people have argued that the word Parimukhang means at the nose tip. And so in the Vibhanga of the Abhidhamma, it says Parimukhang means at the tip of the nose, which makes sense if you're doing Anapanasati, but not in many other contexts, like this particular context we've got here has got nothing to do with breath meditation. Okay? And he's having sat down, he makes the resolution. I will not break this posture, okay? I will not break this posture, okay, until my mind is freed from the defilements without clinging.
It's a long sit.
Phalan kam is that posture.
Yeah.
What about that nun?
It means the sitting posture.
Remember the nun Monday? She sat under the tree for 7 days or something?
Mm-hmm.
And then after the 7 days she stretched out her feet so mind was free.
Mm. Yeah, she would have illuminated the forest. But some of them said that they wouldn't sit down. Some of them said they could remain standing until they got mine. Okay. This kind of bhikkhu would illuminate the Gosinga Sala one. Now, this is very interesting the way that the Buddha does this, and this is very typical of this rhetorical technique that the Buddha uses, where all the good things that have been said before, yeah, he says they're all good, right? And then he kind of undercuts it by like taking it to a new kind of dimension, and especially he takes it to the dimension of looking at the causes of things. So whereas the other bhikkhus were all looking at a state of a realized bhikkhu, yeah? All of them were talking about somebody who's themselves realized or, you know, at least seems to be realized or arahant or something, and that they've actually got that state, and it's the possession of whatever state they have, whatever learning they have, whatever samadhi they have, which is what's going to illuminate the thing. As Buddha's not talking about what they have, he can't care less what this bhikkhu actually is like, right? He's not saying this is a good bhikkhu or a bad bhikkhu or one who's attained in samadhi or anything like that. It's got nothing to do with his actual state or where he's at that time. It's got to do with his resolution or where he's actually going to be going. Yeah? And so it's the cause and putting into place the practice for realizing all the other things. All the other monks were pointing to the results and the Buddha was pointing to the cause of those things. Yeah? And so a very beautiful way of putting it. So he says they're all good in their own way, but there's this other way of looking at it. And the same kind of rhetorical thing is found in several other suttas, most notably in the Acharyabhuta Sutta, where Ananda praises the Buddha for all kinds of good qualities. When he was born, all the devas appeared and the lights appeared and the world quaked and all of these kinds of things. And the Buddha says, yes, 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 that's fine, but this is a wonderful and marvelous quality. The Buddha knows when feelings arise, when feelings persist, and when feelings end. When thoughts arise, when thoughts persist, when thoughts end. Perceptions arise, perceptions persist, and perception ends. That's really wonderful and marvelous. Yeah? So in the same way, he's pointing to the practice that gives rise to all the wonderful and marvelous qualities, rather than looking at the results. So, who's going to illuminate the Santi Forest Monastery?
Well, that's one thing in the Mahayana tradition. They say that people generally fear effects, but a bodhisattva should fear causes.
Interesting.
They were all arahants, right?
No, Ananda wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't.
Probably, yeah.
I just think it's so interesting that what you're saying, that the Buddha speaking to the arahants would say it's about purifying the mind.
And they've taken it for granted. When you're at that stage, I suppose, and
right.
You just think about all the wonderful things that you're capable of, rather than the basics. You ignore it. Just like somebody who drives a Merc would probably ignore people who are walking.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay, so this is the Mahagosinga Wood Sutta.
Very clear, and you know, I think I really enjoyed how they talked about, you know, how each person, you know, came and spoke in line with their own inspiration, you know, due to their own conditioning and the way they've been directing their own mind and the things that they feel
in
balance.
Yeah.
And then how the Buddha at the end, okay, definitely cut and got to the very bottom line of it all, but also acknowledged and honoured and supported each person with.
Right.
The part that they offered, the part of importance that they felt. He didn't say, right, that's not right, this is the bottom line. He honoured and supported and encouraged everyone in that to keep everyone together still as a whole.
Being
the ones that not breaking
or it's honouring diversity,
Indeed.
It's really nice.
So, I mean,
and that self-revelation was incredibly important.
Yeah, and I think that is very important to remember that, because people are different, and even people may be, you know, very advanced in their spiritual practice or whatever, but they still have differences between them, so don't try to fit everyone in the same Procrustean bed. You know what the Procrustean bed is?
No. How would you fit everyone in it?
Sounds like something eating toast in bed or something.
You should know about the Procrustean bed. Procrustes was a villain who was a bandit who was infesting the highway on the way to Athens, I believe. And he used to have a bed, and he used to capture everybody and put them on the bed. And if they were too long, then he'd chop them off, the bits off, to make them short enough to fit on. And if they were too short, then he'd stretch them out until they made the same length.
Seems like a lot of effort just for stealing stuff.
But, yeah. And so Theseus was the hero who got rid of him, and he came down and put him on his own bed. And unfortunately, he didn't fit his own bed, so he ended up the same way as his victims did. And of course, that being a symbol for Theseus was the legendary founder of democracy in Athens. He was made the king of Athens, and then sort of resigned his post and let the people make the decisions. And so this being like a simile for that, that not trying to fit everybody into the same Procrustean bed, but allowing the individuals to speak for themselves. And,
I just keep thinking about words. When the Buddha asked Hariputta to go and into the town square and say that Devadatta acts not on behalf of the Sangha, but on behalf of himself, was that after he tried to... Was that after he tried to kill the Buddha or before? Because I was just thinking about how much space the Buddha gave Devadatta in terms of, you know, giving voices.
Yeah.
You know, someone even when they, you know, are so far out.
Yeah.
And how impressive that was. You know, he didn't just say, look.
I read it the other day. I can't remember. But yeah, for sure. For sure, that's definitely the case. Didn't to sort of immediately condemn him. Okay, let's finish what time is then.
Patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sangham namo.